This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from Gary Johnson, Libertarian nominee for President of the United States, a former governor of New Mexico. Also, LSU sociologist and demographer Troy Blanchard. Where are the one percenters in Louisiana and in Baton Rouge? Where are the highest income people living? And which metro area is the richest in our state? We'll talk with him about this and more. And Claire Peterson from Westdale Middle School on some outstanding happenings there, including the Spanish Immersion Program. All this today, and we invite your support throughout the day because your contributions make WRKF what it is each day of the year. First, the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. And you may reach us online at Jim, well, actually a new email address that Kevin Gallagher reminds me of, inkstershow@wrkf.org. That's E-N-G-S-T-E-R-S-H-O-W at wrkf.org. We lead off with Troy Blanchard. He's an LSU sociologist and demographer, graduate of Baton Rouge High, 3 degrees from the Old War School, and he has set up shop at the campus where he spent much of his youth. And good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
And Troy has a fascinating report on where the money is in our community and throughout the state. If you live north of Florida Boulevard and you are in the top 1% as far as wage-earning families, that's households, what would it take to get in the top 1% if you live north of Florida Boulevard?
Roughly $144,000 of household income, and so that would include all the earners within the household.
So if a man and his wife both earn $75,000 and they live north of Florida Boulevard, they're in the top 1%.
Absolutely.
All right. That seems low.
Well, it's relative to where you live. With the others around you are making, and just what the income distribution is in the area.
And if you live in South Baton Rouge, and you're in the top 1%, what does it take for a household to get there in that area?
$379,000, so it's considerably more.
$379,000 as opposed to $144,000. According to my math, that's $235,000 difference. So that explains a great deal when we hear about the two tails in one city.
Absolutely. No, it does, and that's not to say there aren't people making far more than $379,000 within their household. That's just the bottom line. If you cross over that threshold, you're in.
So how does this affect the quality of life in these areas?
Well, I think the biggest influence that it has is that just our research in sociology and the social sciences in general, research that looks at income inequality, tends to find that communities that have a high level of income inequality tend to be less cohesive, and they're less able to address local problems, mm-hmm. And just problem-solve issues that are coming up in the community. And so that's kind of the general issue that a lot of researchers look at. When we look at the Baton Rouge area specifically, we can certainly see evidence of, income or class segregation. That's pretty clear. You can definitely see that. I think overall the city does work very hard to maintain cohesiveness, but there's certainly these divides that creep up in communities, and it does influence their ability to mobilize and to act on issues.
So south of Florida Boulevard, it's $379,000. North of Florida Boulevard, it's $144,000 as far as the top 1% of household income earners. Now, overall, the number is $357,000, is that correct?
Right.
Which would mean that there are more people living south of Florida Boulevard than there are north of Boulevard.
Yeah, that's
in order for the math to work out, that would have to be the case. But Baton Rouge, some might find surprising, lags behind New Orleans when it comes to the top 1%. there are more rich people in New Orleans than there are anywhere else in the state in the New Orleans area.
No, that's absolutely true. And you know, it's interesting. You just used a word there that in this particular context, you have to be really careful which is this idea of being rich.
Right. If you're making $144,000 as a family, Scott Wilfong, who was on this show the other day, the political consultant, he would probably say you're not doing very well. But most people who earn $379,000 over a continued period of time, they're probably doing okay.
No, absolutely. No, that's completely true. But, you know, I bring that up just because I do work in a higher education setting, and I do talk to a lot of my colleagues and then also people in other professions that come out of school with substantial student loan debt. And in fact, I think there was a report that came out fairly recently talking about how increased mm-hmm. student loan debt was slowing entry into home ownership, which obviously is one of the pathways that we follow to quote unquote get rich.
So what are the professions where usually people are hitting the top 1%?
Okay.
And we're talking about a household here. It's usually two people.
Right. It's two people. And you know, the professions or the occupations that I think would really lead the household, so to speak, into the 1% would be occupations such as legal, you know, being a lawyer, physician, CEO, an executive. But then there's also a category that we don't think of very much, which is management. And so you hear management, and you think, well, that may or may not be a really high-paying occupation. But think about what managers do. There are a lot of managers that manage funds that are in finance that, you know, that obviously do very well. Then the other side of the coin is not necessarily the individual in the household that's getting the lion's share, but the other people in the household that are working. And so that you see a lot of people in education that live in 1%er households. And, you know, basically what that is that somebody that's a teacher that's married to somebody that, you know, is earning substantially mm-hmm. more.
Well, nationally, the U.S. figures show that the top 1% have about 40% of the country's wealth. And in Baton Rouge, according to the report that has been unearthed by Troy Blanchard, associate professor in LSU's Department of Sociology, places that you might not expect have high median income relative to the remainder of our area. For example, Watson. Almost $80,000 a year is the median income. Why is that?
Well, for a lot of these areas, Watson, Prairieville, and you know, Zachary, Central, these are areas that are receiving a lot of migration from the kind of the core of the Baton Rouge metropolitan area, from the city and the unincorporated areas around the city. So these are people who are moving out there. For example, I know for Watson and for Central and Zachary, you know, people move there because they want a combination of good schools, new housing, and they're attractive places to live, you know, kind of an assumed lower rate of crime. And so there are areas that are attractive, and so
mm-hmm. people migrate. But this North of Florida Boulevard figure where $144,000 in household income gets to the top 1%, that would mean that statistically the people living below the poverty level in that area, and it's a wide area north of Florida Boulevard, it's substantial.
Absolutely. No, you know, the poverty rate overall for East Baton Rouge Parish in the most recent numbers that came out roughly about a week ago showed that East Baton Rouge Parish had a poverty rate, I believe, of right at about 20%. And so there are places within Baton Rouge, obviously, where the poverty rate's going to mm-hmm. be going to be maybe even twice that.
Well, you grew up in this city, and you see the disparity in the neighborhoods. And curiously, the dividing line is more than income. There are people who live on either side of the track who never go to the other. And that's something that affects the understanding, I think, of the issues that are important for people in this community. It's as though we live in separate cities sometimes.
No, that's true. And really, you know, the issue here is, especially with respect to some of the broader social problems that we deal with in the city, relate to issues such as concentrated poverty. Mm-hmm. So it's not just what's the poverty rate for this big swath of territory in the parish. It's within specific neighborhoods that you have these extremely high poverty areas. And
you live in Zachary, right?
Right.
And you live, you say, in a neighborhood that's quite diverse.
It is, yes.
And the average income in Zachary, some might find surprising, $65,000, $65,227 a year. So that's not bad.
No, it's not bad. And the thing to keep in mind with a place like Zachary is that it's not just a kind of a suburban set of neighborhoods. It's a, you know, city that's existed there for a while.
Well, thank you, Troy Blanchard, and we shall return.
Thank you.
We shall return with more of the Jim Inkster Show, and certainly we seek your support. It's what is vital and what keeps the trains rolling at WRKF. Back after this brief pause, and we return to the station. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. And you may reach us at inkstershow@wrkf.org. And we are waiting for the arrival of Gary Johnson, of course, is out on the campaign trail. And sometimes these things don't go as expected. But hopefully he will join us in this hour. And he has been with us before, and I'm sure he will be with us again, and hopefully in the next few minutes. But did want to speak a bit more with our guest, Troy Blanchard, the LSU sociologist. And as we went to our break, we noted that the average income in Zachary, where Professor Blanchard lives, is $65,000. In the city limits of Baton Rouge, it's what, only $36,964. So big difference.
Absolutely. No, there is something that's important to keep in mind with Baton Rouge is that a lot of the areas we consider to be Baton Rouge are outside of the incorporated limits. So it's a little different sometimes between the what we perceive and the actual.
Well, Prairieville's 80,000, Denham Springs 47,000, Baker 39,000, and Zachary 65,000, Central 64. Well, Troy Blanchard, let's bring you back soon for a extended visit.
All right. Thank you so much, Jim.
Love your numbers.
Have a good one.
Take care. And we are joined now by Gary Johnson, who will be at Louisiana State University tonight campaigning for President of the United States, the Libertarian nominee, former governor of the great state of New Mexico. Good morning, Governor Johnson.
Jim, great to be with you this morning. I'm going to apologize up front for the fact that I'm driving to the airport right now, so hopefully this connection turns out to be okay.
Well, yeah, hopefully you'll make it to Baton Rouge tonight, because I know many folks want to see you, including former Governor Buddy Romer.
Well, it's terrific that, I got to know Buddy really well, and I just think he's a terrific human being, and that he was value-added in the whole presidential process, but I thought he got just as excluded unfairly as I did.
Well, you've been out on the trail for about a year now, so what are people buzzing about? What are the issues that are near and dear to the American people?
Well, I think first and foremost that we need to balance the federal budget now, believing that if we don't balance the federal budget, we're going to find ourselves in a monetary collapse. I also think that we need to stop the state of perpetual war that we are in, our military interventions resulting in hundreds of millions of enemies to this country that but for our military interventions wouldn't otherwise exist. And right at the top of the list is jobs. I believe that eliminating income tax, corporate tax, abolishing the IRS, and replacing all of that with one federal consumption tax, I'm embracing the fair tax. I think that's really the reboot for the American economy. I think the private sector creates tens of millions of jobs in a zero corporate tax rate environment.
Well, how would this consumption tax work?
So check it out. For those listening, check it out, fairtax.org. But it's a 23% consumption tax. Now, this would be the only federal tax. It ends up being cost neutral over a very short amount of time. Let's use a can of Coke as an example. A can of Coke that sells for a dollar today arguably has 23% embedded tax in it. That would be corporate tax that Coke is paying. That would be Social Security match that Coke would be paying, which would also go away. Social Security, Medicare, unemployment, that would come out of the proceeds of the fair tax. So it ends up being cost neutral. Coke doesn't have to 23% tax out of all the goods and services that we would export. It's the answer to China. And then I'm back to a zero corporate tax rate environment. If that doesn't create tens of millions of jobs, I don't know what it takes to create tens of millions of jobs. I think manufacturing jobs would flock back to the United States given a zero corporate tax rate environment.
Now, you also have stated that the U.S. should get out of Afghanistan. Yesterday, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel told the U.N. that Iran's nuclear capability, or at least its alleged ability to enrich uranium, must be stopped before next spring or early summer, arguing that by that time, the country will be in a position to make a short, perhaps undetectable sprint to manufacture its first nuclear weapon. Prime Minister of Israel is obviously flirting with the idea of military intervention. What do you think of this?
You know, if I were president of the United States, I would be lobbying Israel to not do that. I think that let's not forget that after 9/11, the largest demonstration in the world in support of the United States was in Iran. Over a million people showed up in support of the United States. Well, you know what? We're not just bombing the nuclear enrichment facility. We're going to be bombing innocent citizens that are going to end up dying. We're going to end up with another 100 million enemies to this country. We're going to make the Middle East that much more hot. The whole notion of nuclear deterrence is you lob a nuclear weapon, you are assured of your own destruction. And I realize here Israel is saying that we need to prevent this from happening in the first place. Well, why didn't we bomb Russia? Why didn't we bomb China? Actually, we started to trade with China, and I don't believe that China is a military threat because of how intertwined we are with them from a trade standpoint.
297-5633 if you'd like to join Gary Johnson on the show. Now, the polls have shown that you will get substantial support in some areas, enough that perhaps could swing a very tight election. Do you think you'll be allowed to have any kind of input? And when I say any kind, the debates right now are set, but how will you be able to interact with the candidates that we know most about, President Obama and Governor Romney?
Well, I would like to point out that I'm right now on the ballot in 47 states. We're litigated in the other three states where I'm not on the ballot. We're also on the ballot in the District of Columbia. So although there are other third-party candidates, I'm the only candidate that comes close to 50-state ballot access, and again, believing we will have that. So it is myself, and it's Obama and Romney, and I think that these issues – let me just offer up a prediction. If either one of these guys wins, we're going to find ourselves in a heightened police state. We're going to find ourselves in a continued state of military intervention. We're going to find ourselves continuing to borrow money and print money in an unsustainable way. I believe that the result of what we're doing will be a monetary collapse. And very simply, a monetary collapse is when the dollars that we have don't buy a thing because of the accompanying inflation that is going to go along with borrowing and printing money to the tune of 43 cents out of every dollar we're spending.
Now, you were a Republican who has become a Libertarian. In the distinctions between the two candidates from the major parties, do you see major distinctions between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama?
I really don't. Paul Ryan, he wants to balance the budget his plan. He's going to balance the budget in 20 years. It's incumbent on growth. You know what? I don't see it happening. Barack Obama, I think the words out of his mouth, I find it difficult to disagree with just about everything it is that he says. But you know what? When it comes to the reality doesn't match up at all with the words. And now I'm talking about the fact that we do have a heightened police state in this country. We remain in a state of perpetual war, and the debt and the printing of money, the spending is absolutely not sustainable. And Romney himself is saying that spending in the first year is actually going to go up, even if he's elected. Well, I'm promising to submit a balanced budget to Congress in the year 2013. I can't promise a balanced budget, but look, we got to have a starting point of balancing the budget now. Or, like I say, I think it's going to be sooner than later that we find ourselves without a country. They're both arguing, both parties are arguing over who's going to spend more money on Medicare when all of us realize that we all have to mutually sacrifice or we're going to find ourselves with nothing. We should be in a debate, a raging debate and discussion in this country over how we have to cut Medicare spending and still maintain a safety net for those over 65 in health care.
Gary Johnson will speak at the LSU Theater tonight at 7 o'clock, and he is the Libertarian nominee for president of the United States, former governor of New Mexico, probably the most fit candidate in the race. Are you still running marathons?
I am, and when this ends, either way it turns out, a couple of months I think I will be as fit as I've ever been before, but it's my hobby. So I'm as fit a 59-year-old, I think, as you're going to find. My best marathon time, I believe, is about an hour and 15 minutes faster than Paul Ryan.
Paul Ryan, who lied about his best marathon time.
Well, my best marathon time is 2:48, and believe me, I having run about 20 marathons for time, I think I can tell you within minutes of where I ran all those 20, for what that's worth.
2:48. I mean, that is moving. That
well,
is moving.
It is, and it took a lot of training, and that's something that I do in my life. I remain I realize this is a bit of an oxymoron, but I remain a competitive athlete at the age of 59, and I have a goal to climb the highest mountain on each continent, so unless I'm elected president of the United States, actually planning to go to Aconcagua and climb that in December with my family, and that is the highest mountain in South America.
Now, a 2:48 marathon, what is that, about six minutes and 20 seconds a mile, something like that?
I believe that's right. I think you've got it.
For 26.2 miles, my goodness. And Paul Ryan was over 4 hours in his marathon, although stating that, like you, he was under three. You know, a little mistake in math, but...
I think, I've had the good fortune to do the Hawaii Ironman 4 times. And I believe in, and this may turn out wrong, but by minutes, I believe 2 of my marathon splits in the Ironman were faster than Paul Ryan's time.
All right. Well, here's the President of the United States a few days ago. He makes a gaffe every now and then. Let's listen to it, Kevin. President
First
Obama.
First thing is, I want to see us export more jobs, export more products. Excuse me. I was channeling my opponent there for a second.
Was he talking about you, Gary?
No, I think I bring back the jobs. I think a zero corporate tax rate environment, I think all these manufacturing jobs flock back to the United States. I really believe in a zero corporate tax rate environment. Tens of millions of jobs get created in this country. And imagine all of us not having to deal with the IRS and everything that goes along with that. No more deductions, the notion of fair. And then back to the problems facing this country. I think everybody recognizes that this is going to have to be mutual sacrifice on the part of all of us, and yet both parties, they're really refusing to acknowledge that at all, that it's going to be cake and cookies and Santa's coming and so's the Easter Bunny. Well, you know what? We all recognize they're not, and we all recognize how deep the problems are, but here it is. We're not embarked on them at all.
Governor Johnson, Kevin says we've had a few listeners. They want to know if you've embraced the Libertarian Party stand on legalizing drugs.
Well, since 1999, I have advocated legalizing marijuana. I think that we need to end the drug war. We need to start with legalizing marijuana. It is at a tipping point right now nationally. You got 50% of Americans now supporting legalizing marijuana. Why is the number so high? You know what? It's because we're talking about it. We're talking about it in unprecedented numbers. That's a good thing. But back to Colorado. It's on the ballot in Colorado this fall to regulate marijuana like alcohol. I love the name. Citizens of Denver 6 years ago voted to decriminalize marijuana on a campaign based on marijuana being safer than alcohol. I'm in the camp that 90% of the drug problem is prohibition-related, not use-related. That is not at all to discount the problems with use and abuse, but that should be the focus. Do you want your kids smoking pot? I dare say no parent is going to say they want their kids smoking pot, but do you want to deal with that problem, or do you want the government to deal with that problem? Do you want to deal with that problem, or do you want your kids in jail? I think the answer to that is obvious also.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Governor Gary Earl Johnson, formerly of the great state of New Mexico, now seeking to be the president of the United States, the Libertarian Party nominee, who will be at Louisiana State University Union Theater tonight, 7 o'clock. Thank you, Governor Johnson.
Thanks, Jim. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. And we shall return after this brief pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Thank you for joining us today. And we're in studio now with Claire Peterson. She is a teacher of significance in our community, has been a teacher for 12 years at Westdale Middle School and more than 30 years in the East Baton Rouge Parish system. And you've got quite a success story at Westdale that I know you wish to convey to our listeners.
Absolutely. I'm excited to tell you about an award that we won recently. The Foreign Language Immersion Program at Westdale earned a top national honor by winning the Award for Academic Excellence in Spanish School of the Year 2011. We're very excited about that award.
This is a national award?
Yes, sir. It's given to us by the Ministry of Education of Spain, and we went to the embassy in Spain in Washington, D.C., just recently to get the award.
I bet that was a great experience, wasn't it?
It was exciting, and it wasn't even Westdale's first trip to Washington. Our principal is Sherry Brock, and she was a national finalist for Principal of the Year a few years ago. So this is the second time that she's gone to Washington, D.C. to win an award for Westdale Middle School and East Baton Rouge Parish.
Now, how did Westdale do it?
Well, it's not easy, to be honest with you. This award is given to schools in the United States that show excellence in content and language-integrated learning. And what this means is that your children learn all of their subjects, science, social studies, language arts, in a second language, in this case, Spanish. And this competition is open to all elementary, middle, and high school programs, public and private, across the United States. So it's truly an honor to be named the number one middle school.
So what do you get for winning the award? A pat on the back and see you next year? What happens?
Well, it's exciting. We've gotten a lot of media attention for the good things that are going on in the public school in East Baton Rouge Parish, mm-hmm. and I think that's important. Another really important thing is that our teachers and our students are recognized for the efforts that they're doing every single day with good teaching and good learning that's going on. But there are a few monetary perks as well. The award comes with a $5,000 prize for the school, and one of our teachers will actually be going to Spain for a one-week course in Spanish language and literature that will include room and board. We'll get a set of classroom materials, and we'll also get two AVE licenses, which are online learning opportunities for our students in Spanish, and they're on a very high level. So we're very excited. It's something that we would not be able to afford otherwise.
Claire Peterson at Westdale Middle School, who heads the Spanish Immersion Program, which has just been named nationally for its excellence, 297-5633 or Inkstershow at WRKF.org. How many students are participating in the program?
There are 101 students that are in this program, but there are 9 programs at Westdale that are outstanding, and we have over 1,100 students at the school currently.
Mm-hmm. Now, you, like many other teachers, are kind of the unsung heroes when it comes to educating the youth of our community, and you've been doing this for a while. What are the biggest challenges you face on a regular basis?
I think for me, as a coordinator of this program, one of the challenges is just getting the word out there that there are so many wonderful opportunities in our schools, in our public schools, that parents should be able to take advantage for their children. And so I definitely want people to know about this program and know to call us. We have a gifted program, a talented art, music, and theater program, as well as a couple of different honors programs along with our magnet program that people might be interested in, and I'd love for them to give me a call at Westdale to find out more information.
How many students are at the school as a whole? Do you know?
Well, actually, as of today, we have 1,058 students at the school, with over half of them being in the special programs that I'm talking about this morning.
So 101 are in the
immersion program.
So about 10% of the student body,
right?
Which is significant. The enthusiasm for the students must match your enthusiasm for the program. Otherwise, you wouldn't have the kind of success you've enjoyed.
Right. This is an amazing group of students, and they mirror our parish. You know, we've got a mix of people that are interested in this program. We've got plenty of families that could afford the absolute best private schools in East Baton Rouge Parish, as well as many students that are on free and reduced lunch. And they all come together with a common interest in this program.
Well, the Baton Rouge school system is such that quite often we hear about the obstacles. But in this case, there are some success stories that need to be told, yours in particular. Why do we neglect the good things that are happening sometimes?
People like to watch a train wreck. And so the news likes to cover train wrecks. And it's a sad thing that when good things are happening, that they're not publicized. And so we're really happy and we're very honored that in this particular case, you know, you've taken the time this morning to allow us to come to your show. It's certainly a very highly respected show. You have a very big audience. And so we're very pleased that you've chosen to focus on the positive by allowing us this time this morning.
Well, thank you, Claire. Now, as far as the 101 students, as far as the racial breakdown, I imagine it's a diverse group of students.
We are. In our program, the racial makeup is about probably is reflective of our parish. So we have students of all ethnic makeup, of all income makeup. And they really do, again, like I said, come together because they are all citizens of the world, and they all understand that someday that they want jobs that maybe will take them outside of Baton Rouge, certainly might take them to other countries. They're looking to become global citizens and to be well-versed in second. And some of our kids, by the way, are trilingual, so that they're interested in being able to find jobs around the world that will take them to French or Spanish-speaking countries.
297-5633, Sheetal in Mid-City. Good morning. You're on with Claire Peterson.
Good morning. I just wanted to say that we are thrilled with the program that I have actually two children in. We came from a private school sector and went into the public school sector, and it has been extremely rewarding to my children and to my family as well. So I just want to give kudos to Westdale and the immersion program.
That's nice. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in this morning. I love to hear from you.
And how long have you been doing the immersion program, Claire?
Oh, I'm sorry. We began in 2007.
We
began out of the need for the students that are at BR Flame. This is a local elementary school, and this is really important because for any of you that are out there listening, if you've got young children and you're wondering, what do I do with them? Where do I place them? BR Flame is an absolutely fabulous elementary program that begins the immersion process so that in kindergarten you would be able to put your children into this program and they would be immersed in the second language of either French or Spanish, and ultimately they would matriculate up to Westdale Middle School. One of the benefits of this program is absolutely the intellectual development of your children. Over 40% of the students that are in the immersion program at Westdale Middle School are also in the gifted program at Westdale. When you consider that the national average is only 2% of the population being identified as gifted, you have to begin to wonder if this program is not having a very positive impact intellectually on these children.
And if people are listening in our audience wish to contact someone regarding the program, how do they do it?
They can call me, Claire Peterson, at Westdale Middle School. My number is 924-1308, and I would love to hear from you. I hope many of you will call in, because even if we're not the right program for you, I will do my level best to get you in the right direction and path to find a good school in East Baton Rouge Parish for your child.
Well, thank you, Claire, and congratulations. Can you go back for an encore on this? Can you try again next year?
Well, this particular award is once you've won first place, you're not allowed to apply for this award again for 10 years. But we have quite a few others that we're in the that we're interested in, and so we'll see what happens. Maybe next year at this time, we'll be back to tell you about another award at Westdale Middle School.
All right. Well, thank you, Claire, and congratulations again. Hope everybody has a great weekend. The Saints are trying to get off the skids. They're 0-3 as they head to Green Bay to face the Packers, and Drew Brees will try to tie Johnny Unitas' career record for consecutive games with a touchdown. 47 games in a row for Johnny U, 46 now for Drew Brees of the Saints. Unitas set his record on December 4th, 1960, almost 52 years ago. So quite a ride for Drew Brees, and we'll see if he can tie the record at Lambeau Field. And we'll be back Monday. Until then, stay tuned.